Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's special report. I'm Chris Sheridan.
And I'm Jim Poplava.
Today, we're going to look at how the U.S. economy is now on a war footing. Fed governors talking about 30% unemployment rates, while the U.S. Central Bank and the U.S. government is throwing everything they possibly can at the markets and the economy to try to stave off the negative effects of a mass shutdown of the U.S. economy.
You know, it's amazing, Chris, when you think of we're doing this broadcast on March 23rd. Think back nearly a month ago. Congress was focused on impeachment. The stock market was hitting record levels. We had the lowest unemployment in 60 years. All of that has now changed in just 30 days. You had on the day we're speaking that if Congress doesn't get together with some kind of fiscal policy to fill in the black hole, we could see unemployment levels rise to 30%. We don't think that's going to happen, but nonetheless, maybe the Fed was putting that out there to say, hey, Congress, do your job and do a duty. There's also estimates, and I could say right now we are in a recession. When we started this, talking about this issue, probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago, there were hints, and if you looked at the forecasts that were coming out at the time, they were talking about the economy slowing down to economic growth less than 1% in the first quarter, maybe zero in the second quarter. That's all changed. If you look at the latest stats coming out, depending on you're looking at Goldman's report, they're looking at GDP can contract as much as 24% in the second quarter. We haven't seen anything like that in almost 70 or 80 years. And it's not just here in the U.S. This is happening globally. So we began this year with a global recovery because of stimulus that was being applied by central banks around the world. Fed cut interest rates 3 or 4 times last year. Now, Chris, we're looking at the government is shutting down a wide swath of the U.S. economy. In essence, they are creating a major economic black hole. And that is one of the things that is occurring now in order to, let's say, flatten the bell-shaped curve of this virus and its expansion and increase, by the way, which is the normal trajectory of most viruses. They resemble a bell-shaped curve. What they're trying to do is flatten this so it doesn't overwhelm the healthcare system, as you're seeing in states like New York, possibly California, and Washington. But there are consequences to that, which is if you shut down the economy and you leave it there for a long period of time, you create a black hole that may be hard to climb out of.
Well, Jim, when it comes to this idea that the U.S. government is creating this economic black hole by shutting down the entire economy, I mean, let's face it, 1 out of 3 Americans is now at orders to stay in their home. That is a huge reduction in economic activity, obviously. And so I like the way that Jim Bullard at the Fed has been discussing this. He and others have been saying that we shouldn't even be thinking of this recession that we're now entering as a normal recession. Think of this as an intentional shutdown to limit the coronavirus. And now what we're really looking at here is a 3-month work break.
Well, as long as you give me my paycheck, I can go for that. But I don't think you'll see too many of us on the beach.
Well, you would think. But then again, as we have seen, if you've been watching the news, there's plenty of people out in Miami and other places out on the beach partying, not maintaining their 6-foot social distancing order, of course. So it seems that there's plenty of people out there who don't really care about what the government has to say in terms of staying at home or maintaining distance among other people. Let's move on to some of the industries and areas where we are seeing the economic impacts hit the most.
If you take a look at, as of today, there's 12 states have gone to home quarantine and shutdown. Think of what's going on with the travel and airline industry. I was reading a report, anywhere from 50 to 75% of airline jets have been grounded. You're taking a look at hotels, restaurants, and bars that are being shut down. Sporting events from football to basketball are being shut down. Conventions that would normally take place around this time of the year. A lot of people like to go to Vegas. It's warmer there than it is, let's say, on the East Coast. Casinos in Las Vegas Strip shut down. Retail shopping centers closed down. Clothing, building materials. And just to put this in perspective, I have a client I was speaking with last week on the phone. They own a piece of property that is leased out to a coffee donut chain. And it's a triple net lease, meaning the tenant pays the rent, pays the property taxes, pays the insurance on the building, maintains that building. In other words, all expenses. That corporation that owns this particular restaurant on his property has sent out a letter. They apparently own, I forget what the figure is, 60, 70 different restaurants. Every one of those restaurants are closed down right now, which means their cooks, their waiters, the people that service are all furloughed. In other words, his income has been cut off from all of his restaurants, but he still has his lease payments on all 60 or 70 of those properties, or mortgage payments, depending whether he's leasing or let's say he owns the property. He has the property taxes, which will be due around April. He has the insurance payments. So, Chris, he has all these expenses, and he sent out a letter, I need a three-month reprieve because I have no form of income. And it was interesting because on one of the financial stations this morning, they have a very prominent restaurant owner in New York. And he said he came in today with his tech guy in order to do the Zoom interview with the television station. He said, we are going to shell out over $1 million in the next 2 weeks. But he said, after that, I'm out of cash. And he said, in another couple months of this, I'm gone, meaning that his restaurants will all fold. So as Bullard was saying, this is so much different than a business cycle where you have a overheated economy. The Fed comes in, raises interest rates to slow the growth of the economy, normally putting it into a recession. Then they slash interest rates and we come out of it. This is a deliberate shutdown of the economy by the government. So you have to look at this in a different perspective.
So we're seeing all these ripple effects from people not able to fund their operations. They're having to cut back on the workforce. That is obviously putting a greater drag on the government. So let's talk about what the Fed is trying to do to get in front of this, to prevent this from spiraling out of control.
Okay, one of the things the Fed's trying to do and why they're acting in the way they are is they're trying to keep from what is happening into the economy as a spillover contagion into the financial markets. So the Fed is providing $4 trillion of liquidity. They're backstopping the government dealer market. As they mentioned, they cut the discount rate from 1.75% to 0.25% so banks can lend money to those businesses like this restaurant owner that need the money. They're backstopping the commercial paper market. And if you recall back in the 2008-2009 financial crisis, one of the things that froze was the commercial paper market. Now, that is a market that companies tap for short-term funding needs, and it's mainly you have a lot of money market funds that go in there, and they buy this commercial paper. Well, during the 2008 crisis, many of these money market funds were breaking the buck. In other words, some of the securities they held in the portfolio, for example, the debt of Lehman Brothers, which went under, caused their net asset value to drop. The Fed is coming in now, backstopping that. Secondly, they're also arranging swap arrangements with global central banks because most trade is conducted in dollars, about 65% of trade, and there's a shortage of dollars. So they have swap arrangements to get dollars to those central banks that need it in order to buy and pay for things. There also, it just came out that there's an unlimited buying of treasuries and mortgages. And one of the reasons we talked about this on last weekend's show were that you were starting to see the treasury market become as volatile as the stock market. In other words, one day the treasury market was up 6%, the next day it would be down 6%. We got down to 0.3% on 10-year treasuries, and then it spiked to 1.2%. Now, today, we're back to below 1% again, and that is because there were a mass amount of liquidations that was going into the market where a lot of these money market funds were seeing massive withdrawals as investors panicked and were pulling their money out of money market funds. Dealers who, you know, investors from hedge funds that were getting margin calls. So the Fed went in, and basically, they're buying treasuries and mortgages to keep those rates from spiking. And also, you're going to see the Fed be able to make direct loans to businesses. So just like this restaurant owner or possibly this franchise owner that had over 60 restaurants, he may be able to get a loan from his bankers or directly from the Fed. So the whole idea and what they're trying to do now is keep these businesses from going under and maintain their employees. Because here's another issue that's going to crop up. What happens if these businesses are shut down for 2 or 3 months? What happens to those employees? This restaurant owner, he loses his chef. He loses his waiters. He loses his busboys, his dishwashers. All those people are gone. How do you rebuild all your restaurants? In the case of my client, who has a corporation that owns 65 or 70 restaurants, how do they get all those employees back and restart their business? That's why it's not just what the Fed's doing, but it's going to be very important in terms of what Congress does with stimulus. And unfortunately, they're still stuck on politics, trying to put all kinds of pork, all kinds of political type things into the bills that have nothing to do with the emergency that we're now in.
Okay, so we talked about what the Fed is doing to try to backstop the markets and prevent a wider financial contagion than what we've already seen with the markets plummeting over 30% from their highs. What about on the U.S. government side? What about on the fiscal side? What is it that they are trying to do in the wake of the massive layoffs and economic pain that is being currently felt?
They're trying to get this done in two different ways. One is to get direct payments to actual taxpayers and individuals. And the figures I'm seeing, Chris, are $1,000 per adult, $500 per child, I think a limit of $3,500. I've seen $1,000 to $1,200 per child, depending on which bill you're looking at. So a family of four would get $3,000 to $3,500. So they're trying to handle that, and they want to do that in two tranches. One tranche they would like to get out in the first week of April, which is just around the corner. That's why the more that both parties cannot get this done, the further out it's going to be before we get those checks into the hands of people that badly need it. The second thing is almost equal amount to corporations. Now, you got to understand the purpose of this is to get money to, like this restaurant owner, so he has the money to pay his employees. In other words, keep those employees on the payroll. And there's talk if the loan is made to a company, small businesses, even some big businesses, if it's used to meet payroll, there's talk about forgiveness of those loans. So in other words, they don't want to shut a company down, whether it's a large restaurant chain, a hotel, or an airline, have them get rid of their employees. They want to give them enough cash so that they can make a loan to the company to keep those employees on payroll, because this will end. And when it ends, you are going to need those employees. I don't care if you're Boeing, if you're Marriott Hotels, if you're a large restaurant chain, you are going to need those employees that have been working for you, that have the experience, they know their job. So there's that. And there's this idea, well, gosh, that's a corporate bailout. No, it isn't. What's the other choice? You let these companies go under? They fold, which means then all of a sudden these employees don't have jobs, which means they're going to be on the unemployment rolls. So one way or another, we've got to get the money. Either you can do it in two ways. One party favors just expanding the unemployment benefits, which is also part of the bill. The other party favors, let's get the money to the companies. Let the companies keep those employees on the payroll so that when we do start up, those employees are there to come back to work and resume their jobs. So they're going to try to get the money to these companies with the purpose of maintaining payroll and keeping those employees on the payroll, because they're looking at the other side of this. When you come back and this thing turns around and businesses start up, you're going to see, and what they're hoping for is a V-shaped recovery as demand comes back into the market. Well, how do you come back if your employees are all gone? This happened to, for example, in the 2007-2009 financial crisis in the construction industry, a lot of people and workers were laid off. and they went elsewhere. They found other jobs. So when the economy rebounded, you know, I heard this because we were building a home during this period of time, and it took an extra 6 months to build the home because they couldn't get the workers. You couldn't get enough people, drywall, plumbers, electricians, because a lot of people that left the industry never came back. And that's what they don't want to see happen for the whole economy.
Jim, as we saw in China, at a certain point, they felt that they had contained the virus enough to start allowing people to go back to work. And so there's obviously a risk-reward relationship here that, you know, the economic impacts get to the point where you really have to get people back to work. Otherwise, you will see massive unemployment rates. And then China got to a point where they said, okay, now we can risk another wave of infections by getting people back to work, because we now need to make sure that we can get our factories up online, we can start getting the economy running again. We're not quite there yet. It would still seem that we're a little on the early side to be talking about getting people back to work. However, that said, this is now being brought back up. Clearly, China had to go through this process, other countries going through this process. Once we've seen the wave of infections start to peak, I don't know if anyone knows exactly how far away we are from that point, whether or not it's weeks, if not months. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we're looking at a 15-day shutdown, and the administration says they're going to look at this. I think, Chris, what they're hoping is by the measures we're taking now, we're going to contain this. I know there was a statistic that came out, and we'll get to this later on. We're doing much better than other countries in terms of containing it and the death rates. But at some point, they're going to have to make a decision, just like China. Okay, it's safer to begin now opening up businesses, because you're right, Chris. If they keep this for too long, then you create a black hole which you can never dig yourself out of. And I think that decision we're going to see made in the next 30 days. And what they're hoping for, as we get into warmer weather, if you look at what normally happens during the flu season, it starts at the end of September. It starts to build. The stats that you see at the end of September don't look that bad. They begin to escalate and go exponential as you see them going forward, and it peaks somewhere around the end of February, beginning of March. They're hoping as we head into April with warmer weather that this thing will start helping in flattening that bell-shaped curve. And at that point, they're looking at perhaps reopening everything, because you cannot have this go on. In other words, if you kept the economy shut down for another 3 months, just like that restaurant owner in New York, he's out of business in 2 months. He'll never come back. So that's a business with who knows how many thousands or hundreds of employees that doesn't come back, and you can't afford to do that. And that's why that Fed governor was talking about, we have to handle this right, because if we don't, we could be looking at a 30% unemployment rate, and you don't want to get there.
Jim, let's talk about oil for a moment here, because on the day that you and I are speaking, Monday, March 23rd, oil is at $23 per barrel. We have not been here for quite some time. Gas prices are thankfully getting cheaper, which is helpful for many Americans, of course. But this is going to be putting a lot of pressure on the shale industry, on oil companies. There's already been some pushback on the Democratic side saying that we're not going to bail out the oil industry. This is something we've been discussing, that we're setting up for some sort of fight here. This is in the works right now, which is one reason why the so-called stimulus bill that was attempted to pass over the weekend got shut down, because of disagreements over exactly who is going to be getting a bailout or who is going to be getting emergency funds. So tell us, what's at stake here with the energy industry, with oil prices, where they're at right now?
We're going to cover part of this in the big picture on the weekend show, but the way all of this started out, you saw the Saudis go to the Russians and they said, let's cut production. The Russians say, you know, told the Saudis, we're not going to do this, because if we do and we cut our production down, you cut your production, all we're doing is ceding market share over to U.S. shale producers. So Russia really wanted to go after U.S. shale producers. And so hence, the Saudis basically said, well, look, we're not going to cut back production while you're increasing, and we're the only ones to do it. So that initiated the price war. So there was a good article in the Wall Street Journal and oilprice.com talking about the president getting involved with a bill where the president actually goes in and intervenes, works with the Saudis to cut back production and maybe sanctions against Russia. But it's obviously hurting the shale patch. And unlike the downturn in energy that we saw in 2014 and 2016, Chris, back then, a lot of these shale producers, which weren't making any money, they were actually losing money to the tune of billions of dollars a year, they were able to roll over their loans. Today, the biggest risk, and especially in the junk bond market, about 25% of those junk bonds are energy related. A lot of these energy companies, I was reading a story, and we'll get into this on the weekend show, about 28 out of 34 companies, they may not be here. And even the big companies, I don't care if you're looking at Chevron, Exxon, if you're looking at Royal Dutch, a good example is what happened in talking about a perfect storm was a company called Occidental Petroleum. They were moving in. They were certainly one of the larger companies in the shale play, and they were moving in. They wanted to expand their presence in the shale plays in Texas, so they made a bid for Anadarko Petroleum. And Chevron had already made a bid in calculating on what they could pay for it. And all of a sudden, Occidental comes in, outbids Chevron. Chevron walks away from the deal. And as a result of this, Occidental Petroleum took on not only Anadarko's debt, but also had to take a lot of debt on themselves. They took a $10 billion loan from Warren Buffett with an 8% convertible preferred. And now Occidental Petroleum has like 40, I think the figure was 44 to 48 billion in debt, Chris, with a market cap of 10 billion. And so it backfired. It backfired in two ways. Number one, they leveraged up their balance sheet with way too much debt. And you had the perfect storm coming in with demand dropping precipitously with the coronavirus. I heard that it's like 8 to 10 million barrels of basically consumption daily is going to be lost due to the reduction in economic activity globally. I mean, when you have airlines that have 50 to 75% of their planes on the ground, you have people not driving in their cars going to work on a normal basis, you are reducing demand. So you had a reduction in demand. At the same time, you have a price war going in with the Saudis and the Russians. They're basically going to say, you know, Saudi Arabia is threatening to pump 13 million barrels. Russia is threatening to pump like a 500,000 more barrels a day. So you have demand dropping and supply increasing. At the same time, the company leveraged up. So what do you have now? You have Carl Icahn, who just took over 10% of the company, along with Buffett. They basically control it. Carl Icahn's basic message to the chairman and the president of the company, they're bringing back the old chairman. It can be war or peace. Take your choice. And they're trying to work through. But, you know, talk about a perfect storm. Occidental Petroleum is a good example. And here was a large company. You can imagine how bad it is for the smaller shale producers. So, you know, you pick up the papers every day, you see one company after another laying off thousands of workers in the oil patch. So here's another area where you're going to see widespread unemployment.
So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
I would say to the House, as I said to those who have joined the government, I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears and sweat. We have before us an ordeal of the most grievous kind. We have before us many, many long months of struggle and of suffering. You ask, what is our policy? I will say, it is to wage war by sea, land and air, with all our might and with all the strength that God can give us. That is our policy. You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word, victory. Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory however long and hard the road may be. For without victory there is no survival. Let that be realized.
So those are two famous clips. The first one from FDR in his 1933 presidential inauguration during the Great Depression. And the second was from Winston Churchill in a famous speech that he gave to UK Parliament on May 13th, 1940. Jim, how do those speeches relate to what you see going on right now?
This is one of the problems that we have, Chris. The media is still stuck on stupid and peddling fear. I mean, can you imagine when FDR took over as president, if he got up there instead of saying the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, he goes, I am fearful. I'm not sure how we're going to get through this. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. Or if Winston Churchill, taking over the prime ministership, came in and said, you know what, I think the best thing we can do is to surrender to Hitler. And at one time, if you saw The Darkest Hour, Halifax and former Prime Minister Chamberlain were thinking of negotiating with Hitler, which would have really involved a surrender. So you want your leaders to be strong. You want them to be positive. I mean, do you want to see the President of the United States, the Prime Minister of England, get up and address the public, fearful, unsure of themselves of what they're going to do? Just think of the impact that would have on you psychologically or the market. So, I mean, some of these questions are just, I mean, basically they border on stupidity. I mean, can you tell us when this is going to peak and how many victims it'll have? I mean, Chris, that would be like me asking a technician to come on my program. Can you tell me the hour and a day that the Dow will bottom, where interest rates will be 30 days from now? I mean, no technician is even going to try to. In fact, if you take a look at last week's technician, Art Hill, he's saying the volatility has been so great across all asset classes, whether it's stocks, bonds, or commodities, it says it's so difficult to judge and gauge where this is all going because the volatility is so high. And that's one of the roles that the Fed is trying to do is come in here, because one of the reasons you've seen volatility spread to the Treasury market is liquidations. People are just trying to get cash. As we talked about last week on the show, we talked about corporations tapping their credit lines with companies because they don't want to find themselves where they were in 2008 when the commercial paper market froze and they had no access to credit. So that's why you're seeing the Fed back that up. That's why you're seeing $4 trillion come into this market. So I don't care if it's Boeing, whoever it is, they're going to be able to have the cash to meet the demands on them. You can't shut a business down, as we are doing right now, to contain the virus and then not give them access to cash or credit, because then you're really in trouble. So, you know, you want to see leaders that are confident, that look like they're addressing the issues, and in fact, bringing the private industry to work with government, because if you're short of respirators, masks, sanitizers, who's going to make that? It's not going to be the Fed. It's not going to be Congress. It's going to be the private sector that makes these things. So you have to make that private sector work with what you're trying to achieve in a common goal, which is keeping this economy and filling that black hole. And it would be more helpful if the media would focus on some of the positive things that we've been talking about here. The Wall Street Journal has done a series of excellent articles on the food industry, the stimulus, what needs to be done, where it's going. It's unfortunately, you've got the media with panic and you've got politics going on with the stimulus bill where they're trying to insert political agendas into the stimulus, or they're trying to insert pork barrel projects for the district. This is not the time you need to be doing that. You need to be focusing on what do we need to do to keep companies afloat, people with jobs, money and checks for those who have been furloughed so the economy keeps running.
Jim, there's been a lot of parallels that have been made between the 1918 flu pandemic and today's COVID-19 coronavirus. One of the reasons is, of course, because the 1918 Spanish flu or flu pandemic was the most severe pandemic in recent history. According to the CDC, it was estimated that about 500 million people, or one-third of the world's population, became infected with the H1N1 virus in 1918, and that there was at least 50 million people worldwide that died, about 675,000 here in the United States. Now, things would have to get a lot worse in order to match those types of numbers that we saw in 1918. What are your thoughts on the comparisons between these two events?
Let's take a look at the world that existed in 1918. Chris, automobiles and travel had not become ubiquitous as it is today. I mean, today, how did we get it? We had people coming here from China, people coming here from Europe. And so it's much easier to spread a virus because of travel. We're an interconnected world. The global supply chain is interconnected. Companies, we're going to be doing a show on this. The global supply chain is going to change in ways you've never thought or imagined over the next 5 years. It's the end of the supply chain, naming one country like China, making it the manufacturer of 85% of your drugs or 90% of your vaccines. So it's much easier to spread a virus because we're more of an interconnected world in 2020 than we were in 1918. Secondly, you have technology that enables you to work and carry on. We have the internet. You and I, our office is, you know, all our employees are working from home. We're all connected with the internet, the cloud, our systems, our software, and we're able to do this show. You're in one location, Chris. I'm in another location. The guests that we get on the show, last week we had guests from Belgium to London on the program. So it's an interconnected world, which makes it easier to transmit the virus. But on the other hand, unlike 1918, I mean, there wasn't the media that exists today. You didn't have 24-hour news coverage that could be good or bad. I mean, you got your news probably in the local newspaper. We didn't have radio then. We didn't have television, and we certainly didn't have the internet. So your average person in a small town didn't have access to the information that you and I have. I mean, I've been on the phone with doctors for the last 2 months. I've been on the internet doing research, and we didn't have that information available. And I would say another big difference is not just communication and technology, but also the medical advances that have been made today if you compare 2020 to what was available in 1918.
Jim, I know that you've been reading, like many of us, a lot of the different things that are going on when it comes to the latest research and developments around the coronavirus, various ways to protect yourself. You also have the opportunity to speak with a wide range of different doctors. They provide some very good information, I know as well, that you've been passing along to the rest of the office here. If you wouldn't mind, share with our audience some of that information in terms of what people can do at home with their families or even while they're going about their day when it comes to preventing the spread of the coronavirus and then also protecting themselves.
Well, you know, Chris, we did a show, I think our first show was Remain Calm and Wash Your Hands. What do you hear daily in every press conference when you see the doctors, the head of the FDA, Dr. Fauci, they talk about washing your hands? Well, it turns out there's a reason they're telling you this. Apparently, this virus is like a sticky substance. So if you are infected with it and you put your hands on an escalator, the knobs on an elevator, or the buttons at a grocery store, the handles, it's a sticky substance. So when you put your hand on it, it sticks to your hand. And the way this virus works, it when it gets inside, it starts coming together inside your body. But when you wash your hands with soap, it breaks up, gets rid of the stickiness, it cleans it, it kills the virus, prevents it from gelling together. So folks, if you're looking for sanitizers, one of the best things you can probably do is get hand soap. And I can't tell you how important it is to wash your hands. And if you think you're ordering stuff online, you're picking up that package. I had one client I was talking to, and he's saying, well, you know, I'm not going out. I'm not going to the store. I'm ordering everything online. I said, well, that package you get on your doorstep, first, somebody probably handled that on the assembly line. Somebody handled that to put it inside the truck that was going to deliver it to your house. And the person driving that truck also handled it. It's my understanding, we're going to try to get some exact figures on this, but on cardboard packages, the virus can remain alive for about 3 or 4 hours. On metal handles and substances, I think it's maybe 24, 48 hours. So that's why you constantly, like when we get our packages, I open them up in the garage. I don't bring them inside the house. fold the boxes, put them in the garbage can, bring the items in, and thoroughly wash my hands with soap and also the counters. We wash the counters where you place these items because you could be bringing the virus inside your house if any of your packages have been handled by somebody that had COVID-19. So that's number one, soap. Second thing, we're going to put up an article on copper masks and gloves, which are antibacterial. We have a couple articles from The Guardian out of London and The Jerusalem Post, along with an Israeli company that makes cotton masks that are infused with copper, and also glove companies. The other thing we're going to put on the website is this study that was done by the world's foremost doctor. He did a study, I think it was 30 or 40 French patients. All of them had COVID-19 and a 100% success rate. Now, the idiots in the media are saying, well, you know, you need several years of testing. The drugs that they're using, which is hydroxychloroquine and zithromycin, or what's commonly referred to as a Z-Pak, they're used in a combination, is what this doctor used, with a 100% success rate. So, you know, picture you're in New York. You've got a person who's on a respirator. He's deathly ill. Do you want to say to that person, you die, or let's try this that's been proven effective in several case studies? Or do you want to say, look, we'd like to give it to you, but we want to wait until 18 months or 2 years until this has been thoroughly tested? No, you want to get that out. That's why Governor Cuomo says we want to give it. So you've seen Bayer that's donating three million pills of the hydroxychloroquine. You've got Teva, who's also donating it. So there's three articles. There's one on this study done by the French doctor with 100% success rate with hydroxychloroquine and zithromycin, or Z-Pak. The article on hand soap, and also about copper-infused mask and gloves. We're going to put that up on the website. And do yourself a favor. Draw your own conclusions. Read these reports, and maybe you do even more research like we're doing internally in our firm. And if you think these are worthwhile things, we would appreciate, pass this podcast and recommend it to your friends. You just may save their life.
So in sum, the U.S. economy is now on a war footing. The U.S. government and the Federal Reserve are doing everything that they can to try to stave off a wider disaster by pumping in trillions of dollars to the financial markets and the economy. The ripple effects of this are profound. It is hard to even foresee exactly how far they spread. But as long as we see companies retooling their efforts to produce ventilators, protective equipment, and that Americans and American businesses can come together to pool their efforts from the bottom up to try to resolve some of the issues that are at work. However, we do need to still see a peak in the number of infections, and that is still something we don't know when that's going to happen. It's still too early to say we're there yet. That could be something that's weeks or months away. So until that happens, as you mentioned, Jim, one of the best things that you can do is limit your interaction among other people, as the government recommends. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, and do what you can to prevent you from getting infected and from also infecting others. And again, we'll have a list of links where this interview is located off Financial Sense. If you want to go through some of these resources, if you want to check out some of the items that Jim discussed in today's podcast. As always, if you'd like to give us a call at Financial Sense Wealth Management to speak with our wealth advisors about our outlook or what we are doing in client portfolios, please feel free to give us a call at 888-486-3939.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.